Anderson heaving one down the sideline, and he's got Cass Allen.
Listening to the Bruin Bible. This is your host, Will Decker, bringing you UCLA football content all throughout the year for LA Football Network.
Up, LAFB fans, you are listening to the Bruin Bible right now, but we want to bring to you our sponsor for the show. It's Bet Online. Our partners at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all of the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's Wimbledon finals. I know our guy Madman will be all over that. The big tennis fan of the bunch. Major League Baseball, Dodgers in the midst of a big-time season, highest payroll in the league, three MVPs in the lineup. Can they figure it out? The latest fighting news, a huge MMA fight coming up this weekend for the UFC, and even next season's early NFL futures. I know you guys will be hammering the Rams and Chargers overs on the futures for next season. Head to our website to use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LAFB to get the bonus and get into the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. What is up and welcome to a special edition of the Bruin Bible. Will Decker, your host here, with the man, the myth, the legend, the madman in the cut for LAFB. I did the first two position group rankings without the help of somebody else. It's nice to have a familiar guest in the field. It doesn't feel like I'm talking to myself for 30 minutes. Madman, how are you doing today, brother?
Driller, it's so great to see you, hear your voice. The Bruin Bible always feels like home, so thank you so much for allowing me to partake.
I love having you out here, man, and I do want to put a preface on this. We are ranking the top receiving corps within the conference. And I actually messed up when I was talking to Madman. I forgot to include a specific group that will be named later on the list. So I'll make sure to notify that when it comes up. So our list will be a little bit of differences stemming from that. But we'll explain why. It's going to be an interesting team to look at. And it's very high on our list. So I'm really excited to talk about them. We've done the quarterbacks. We've done the running backs. Naturally, we're going to the receiving rooms now. And the Pac-12, it offers a wide variety of different receiving groups from the north to the south. Some guys you may be familiar with, some guys you may not be familiar with, some guys that were held back from systems where they will get elevated this year. There's a lot of teams that were on the cusp of making this. And Madman, were there some teams for you specifically that just missed the cut? Because I had a few teams that I really wanted to put in the top five, but I just didn't have enough evidence, enough stats, enough firepower to essentially put them into that top five group.
Will, I felt exactly the same way as you. There were two or three teams in particular where I had to really sit there and say, man, you know, three through eight in the Pac-12, you're really kind of splitting hairs, especially when you're looking purely wide receiver, really splitting hairs there because it's similar guys, similar makeups, physical attributes, speed, you know, similar productivity. And so it's hard to really differentiate there. I think there's some separation when you kind of get to the top three, but four through eight, four through seven, really tough.
I think it's going to shock people. My number three or four team on this list, and I'm excited to bring it to the table. Some of the teams that just missed the cut for me personally, University of Arizona stood out because you look at what they have and you see Jacob Cowan come in there. And this guy is a monster performer of what he was able to do at UTEP last year. 69 grabs, 1,300 plus yards, 7 touchdowns. This guy had 17 catches of at least 30 yards last year. This guy is a certified baller. You know, he posted the second best yards per route clip among receivers at least with 40 targets per PFF. But when I'm looking at the totality of the receiving room, I can't put Arizona on the group because we have relatively just a bunch of unproven guys. And yes, I know they got the highest receiving, commitment within the Pac-12 last year, a guy named Totoroa McMillan from Southern California. We haven't seen this guy in the field yet, so I cannot, put them in there until I get a sample size of that guy. Some other teams that came very close to making it for me, I'm really, really high on Oregon State this year. I think this is a team that made some serious jumps
And it started with the offense last year. And it was more on the ground game with B.J. Baylor, you know, leading the Pac-12 in regular season rushing. But you get a veteran quarterback in Chance Nolan coming back, who was doing big things for them. You got transfers from guys at big schools. Treshawn Harrison, a Florida State transfer. Yep. Tyjon Lindsey, a former Ohio State commitment that pivoted to Nebraska that came to Oregon State. And a guy like Micaiah Tung, another big name transfer. So, like, you just have talent in that room. You've got a quarterback that I think is relatively underrated in Chance Nolan that guided them to 7 wins. Just missed the cut for me. I could not put them there. And then the pass happy school we always talk about, Washington State, new coach in there and Jake Dickert. But you look at what Dazon Stribling did last year as a true freshman, 44 catches, 400 plus yards, 5 touchdowns. You get Renard Bell coming back with 43 starts to his name. You know, this guy was a slot receiver that we know of in the Pac-12. I couldn't put any of these guys on the list because I think Stribling can make a jump next year, but I'm not ready to put them on the list. Were any of those teams on your top 5, Mad Men?
So, Thriller, I've got Arizona in my top 5. Okay. I agree with you about Stribling in Washington State. Very similar diagnosis for me. They were right on the cusp. Oregon State as well. There were some challenges, there in terms of kind of getting them into the top 5. But I'm excited to sort of reveal why Arizona. And I think I've got a shocker in my top 2 that I think will be fun to talk about.
I love it, man. Well, let's get to the top 5. You are, coming through for me on this. I'm not, Tom Hanks on Castaway talking to myself here. Like the previous 2 podcasts, kind of got left in the dark on some of those. But, Madman, who is your number 5 team when it comes to the best receiving corps within the Pac-12?
And, Thriller, before I jump into number 5, might I say you were absolutely phenomenal, okay, as a solo artist. Beyonce without Destiny's Child, it was beautiful. I had my coffee listening to you. It was soothing. I don't have the Calm app. I have the Will Decker Bruin Bible. That's what I have.
Oh, man. I appreciate it, brother. I know you're just blowing smoke my way. I love you for that. But, buddy, I got to hear it. Who's your top 5? Who's your 5th ranked wide receiver?
Number 5 receiving room. And I think this may surprise a lot of folks. I have Oregon. And I think a lot of people may think, you think of Oregon, you may be even thinking higher on that list. I love what they're bringing back. They've got, Chris Hudson, who was second leading receiver last year, 31 catches, 419 yards, 2 touchdowns, 5'9", real speedster. They've got Troy Franklin coming back, another guy, 6'2", really fast, 18 catches, 209, 2 touchdowns. And then the guy I'm really high on is Dante Thornton. He was someone who didn't play a lot, very sparingly, kind of 6th, 7th wide receiver, given who was already on the field last year. He only had 9 catches for 173 yards and 2 touchdowns. But what really stood out was the 4 catches for 90 yards and the touchdown in the Alamo Bowl, and really showed that when he got the reps and when he got the opportunity, he could be extremely productive. He's got a very interesting frame at 6'5", 197. Reminds me a lot of a young Dwayne Jarrett in the USC days. Wow. Very long, a faster Dwayne Jarrett. And then, of course, we've got our ex-beloved Bruin, Chase Cota, joining that room as well. So I think that there's a real nice variety to what they're bringing back. A little raw, a little unproven. Why I don't have them a little bit higher, Will, is a lot of guys who are really fast, really shifty, but I worry a little bit about the moving the chains guys, the across the middle guys. Can they take the hits and get some of those tough yards? There's a lot of home run capability there, but can you get those singles and doubles when you really need it to keep drives alive? But overall, solid group. And Oregon always brings in so much talent every year. But even if you look back at kind of the Chip years, they've never really had a home run wide receiver. And, they've had great tight end play, obviously the great backs, the great quarterbacks. So that's why I have them at 5, a lot of raw talent. I think they need to show some things. And the Oregon system sometimes doesn't let wide receivers unleash to their full capability, but a solid number 5.
I do not have Oregon in my top 5. And there's a couple reasons as to why. I think there's a lot of talent in that room. If you're going off of high school rankings and what they were projected at the college level, there's a lot of reasons you can put them there. But there's several reasons why I didn't have them in my top 5. Last year, you look at their receiving room, Travis Dye led them in catches. That's a running back, right? So a little different from there. Chris Houston had a nice season last year, a guy that I'm looking forward to watching in Pac-12 play. It just didn't have the eye-popping stats I would like. I mean, you mentioned Chase Kota, a guy that I think relatively underperformed at UCLA. We didn't see, sure, you know, the big-time plays that we were kind of expecting at UCLA. And you couple that with they've got a new coaching staff. They're going to have to learn a new offense with Kenny Dillingham. We're not even sure, you know, if Bo Nix is the quarterback there, can we count on some of these guys making plays? It's kind of funny because I'm going to be playing devil's advocate for one of these teams on the list, and I hope you call me out on it. But I just in my head, I just cannot put them there until I see, you know, an alpha from that room kind of step up. A lot of talent, but we need somebody to, you know, be the boss of this receiving group. And I just didn't see it on paper, but still a team that I heavily considered and I thought was going to be there. Madman, tell me if this team is on your list. I've got number five. This is a team that is situationally based, but a team that has shown flashes. And we talk about this on the quarterbacks episode, a guy that is really in the scouts, you know, eyes this year, and a guy that we're going to be able to talk to tomorrow at Pac-12 Media Day, Tanner McKee. This guy has a lot of hype going into year two as a starter within Stanford. And just the receiving room that he has there, and Elijah Higgins, John Humphreys, Bryson Tremaine, guys that got injured last year, but you look at the top six receivers they had, or all six receivers that caught a pass last year, they're all returning for Stanford. Having that familiarity for McKee coming back, I think, is huge. And then you couple that with the fact that, you know, a guy like Michael Wilson, you know, he got injured last year, but you look at the stats before he got injured as a sophomore, 56 catches, 672 yards, and five scores as a starter. That's pretty solid numbers there from a guy like Michael Wilson. I go back and look at some of the other dudes as well. Elijah Higgins, former four-star guy, really showed some flashes last year. 45 grabs, 500-yard campaign. And the guy that was blowing up before he got injured last year, Bryson Tremaine, five games played last year before he got injured, five touchdowns. So this guy is still making some plays out there. I think if you combine all of that with another year with a starting quarterback like McKee, who we, you know, are banking on making a jump, I think those stats are going to make a little bit of a run themselves. What do you think about Stanford's receiving room? Because I got them at number five.
I got them at number two.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That was the shocker.
When you put it all together, Will, now obviously they got to stay healthy, and you mentioned some of the stats there. Bryson Tremaine, you mentioned, the 20 catches, 245, five touchdowns in five games. The guy got hurt in that overtime dramatic win against Oregon. He was a beast, and he was a guy that was going to be the next great big Stanford receiver. If you just project that out to 12, 13 games, you're talking about a guy who's going to be 500, 600 yards, 13 touchdowns, a red zone machine. When you look at a guy like John Humphreys on the other side, another big 6'5 kid, 21 catches, 287 and a touchdown. He only played seven games last year.
Yeah.
And when you factor in, you mentioned Elijah Higgins, 44 catches, 502 yards, four touchdowns. He's kind of that speedster. He missed two games last year. And then when you factor in that Michael Wilson only played four games last year, missed half the season before, his last full season, you mentioned the 56, the 572, five. How many guys, how many teams are there in the Pac-12 where you could legitimately line up and say, there's four guys that are going to give me 500 yards in a season if they're healthy? And oh, by the way, Tanner McKee is an NFL quarterback. If David Mills made the NFL, Tanner McKee is absolutely going to play on Sundays in this league. And he's going to pepper it all over. I think Stanford's receiving room is wildly underrated because it's so disjointed. Different guys have gotten hurt at different points in the last couple of years. We have not seen even close to this being put together. I have them at number two, and I think they're going to shock a lot of people in the conference.
I love it, man. And just hearing your points, it makes me kind of want to knock them up a few more places. But I'm glad we're on the same wave with Stanford. Half the battle is the quarterback that's throwing you the football. And this is why I seriously considered Arizona, because I think Jaden Delora transferring there from Washington State, a certified gunslinger, a guy that has, you know, a 23 touchdown to a 9 interception ratio within the Pac-12 from Washington State with all those reps, Jacob Cowan's going to be a perfect fit there. I just need to see that number two guy. That's why I knocked him out of the top five. But having McKee, having those familiarity receivers, boy, it's sounding better and better the more I talk about it. And I think in hindsight, I'm going to have to come back to this podcast and knock them up a few slates. So I love that Stanford is on your list as well. We know where to go at number two for you. Where do we go at number four, Madman? Because I'm excited to hear what we got going on here.
So for me, Will, this is where I think you and I differed slightly in the top five. This is where I've got Arizona. I've got them right above Oregon. And because I really like what Jed Fish is building there. You know, when we talk about Jacob Cowing, right, you mentioned the great stats in terms of the 40-plus plays and obviously the usage rate there. But the fact that he got 1,429 yards receiving at UTEP, which was more than double the next best guy on that roster, he was basically a one-man band in a Division I setting. And when you juxtapose that against, say, a Jordan Addison who won the Biletnikoff last year at Pitt, this guy only had 150 fewer yards than the Biletnikoff winner. There's not a lot of guys out there that can produce at this level anywhere in college football. And so when you've seen it that proven, when you put it together with a Dallaire, when you put it together with a Jed Fish, I think he's going to be amazing. And then I'm very high on Tetairoyo McMillan. Well, he is the highest rated wide receiver Arizona has ever gotten. This guy got offered everywhere, four-star. Everybody in the Pac-12 wanted him, and he picked 1-11 Arizona and Jed Fish and believed in what they're building. And I love the compliment. I love the fact that Cowing is 5'11", electric, live wire. I love the fact that McMillan is 6'4", and he's going to be that in-between guy. And so they complement each other so well. And while Arizona doesn't have the depth of, say, Oregon, the fact that they have such complementary pieces is what I really liked about them, and I'm expecting a big year, whereas a group like Oregon, like you said, a little unproven but a little redundant. And so when you sort of – depth matters when they're complementary. You know, there's no point in having the same six versions of the same guy, and that's why I like Arizona as a sleeper here at four.
And I like it. You know, every part of me wanted to put them there. And I think if we do this week six of the college football season, let's say McMillan does hit like we're talking about, yes, they're in my top five. They're the last team out. Because Cowing, what he did last year is as impressive as any receiver not named Jordan Addison, you know, within the country last year. I mean, this guy had two games of 170-plus yards receiving. Just think about how crazy that is.
Right.
For a running back, that is nuts. For a receiver, that's just like this man, we knew it was coming. We could not stop, you know, Jacob Cowing in the open field. I just need that other guy. You give me another guy that can get you what one of, you know, Stanford wide receivers did, which one of, you know, Oregon's, you know, wide receivers did it. Chris Houston stat-wise, they're there for me. So I get it, man. I get it. I like the pick at Arizona, and I think if we revisit this too, you know, like I said, Stanford might be knocked up a few places. Arizona might be knocked up a few places. So I like the pick. Here's my big shocker. And I've got reasons to defend this pick. I have at number four, the University of Washington Huskies. And I want to say this because I think their two main receivers, Jalen McMillan and Romeo Odunze last year, both overproduced with one of the worst starting Pac-12 quarterbacks we've seen in recent years in Dylan Morris. You don't believe me? Go back and watch the opening game and what he gave them against Montana State. Three interceptions, no touchdown passes. Yes, I mean, it was brutal. We saw it all year with Dylan Morris, just was not the guy. And when I like about McMillan and Odunze, they put up solid numbers with that bad of a passing offense last year. McMillan, 39 grabs, 470 yards, receiving and three scores. Odunze, 41 catches for 415 yards and four touchdowns. Now, you take that they add a new head coach in Caleb DeBoer, Fresno State offensive-minded coach. This guy averaged 33 points a game and 461.5 yards of total offense per game. UCLA fans, we are more than familiar with the passing offense that Fresno State can provide. As we saw with Jake Haener, you know, killing us last year. They do a 4-5 wideout spread and just kind of just hit you down the field, 15, 20-yard gains like it's nothing. When you have those two wide receivers, that makes a big difference. And that offense implemented in there, I'm seeing a huge jump from those guys. Now, the one area where I could get wrong on this is Michael Penix Jr. transferred from, you know, Indiana. You know, a quarterback that has, you know, the last 2 years has been sub 60% completion, ugly at best. I think he's better as a game manager in the version of college football. But where I think this will go right is they recruited a five-star quarterback a year ago. This is Sam Heward. This is the son and nephew of Brock and Damon Heward, two NFL quarterbacks. Big lefty. Yes, he had a rough game against Washington State in his only start last year, four picks. I don't care. That was a mess of a situation last year in Washington that eventually led to a head coach getting fired there. So if I'm looking at a Sam Heward with an offensive-minded coach and two receivers that have consistently proven to play when, you know, the odds were against them, I'm taking this Washington unit and I'm putting them at number four because I think both these guys are capable for going 800-plus receiving yards next year for the Huskies. What do you think about that pick at number four, Madman?
Miller, it's a very credible argument, and I had Washington at six for a lot of reasons that you've mentioned, and I won't repeat them because you've said them so well. Here's why I didn't have them in the top five. You mentioned Phoenix Jr. He's not a pure thrower. And it's not only the sub 60% for me, Will. It's the quality and the complexity of those throws. Those were pretty simple read option throws. Indiana ran a pretty basic spread offense, and he still couldn't really be accurate. And so that really concerns me, especially as Washington is still trying to grow in the offensive line and in the trenches. That was their big problem last year. They couldn't hold anybody at the line because they couldn't throw. They couldn't run. It wasn't like they could do one thing and couldn't do the other. Their offense was just completely anemic. And so they have those problems. And Phoenix Jr. is going to be in a more difficult, arguably, position than he was in Indiana. And I think Jed Fish, given that he's year two in Arizona, we've got a year one system here. That's why I had Arizona crack my top five and Washington not. But I think those two kids are very credible. How much of those yards were empty yards, you know, when they were behind versus critical yards? So even though they have the numbers, I think they still have to prove it a little bit more on the field. But the talent is there with Odunzo and McMillan, and I had him at six for all those reasons. So we're not far off.
Fair argument, man. All fair points. This is DeBoer's first year in the Pac-12. Phoenix Jr., like, there's no nice way to say it. He's just not, frankly, good at the quarterback position. What I'm banking on is the Heward situation. If Heward can take that step and be kind of the Washington quarterback they've been waiting for like 25, 30 years at Washington. This is the biggest quarterback recruit they've gotten. Similar to what McMillan is at Arizona, right? We haven't seen the evidence. We're banking on just recruiting rankings. If Heward can step up and be that guy in a DeBoer offense with the stats I just mentioned, I think those guys are going to put up huge numbers. So I like my pick at Washington at four. I know you had him just on the cusp. So we're very similarly aligned on these two teams. This is the top three. I got to hear where the madman's going with this. I'm excited. I've got a special team at number three. I got to hear yours.
So, Will, you've already heard what my number two was. So, but at number three, and, you know, this is a little bit of a trick question, Will, and we'll probably get to it at the end. I think there's going to be some fun conversation when we get all the way to the top of the list. But number three, all hail the mighty Bruins of UCLA. No doubt about it for me. Top three receiving core. We've talked about it ad nauseum, Will. Jake Bobo, the 74 catches, 794 yards. He's going to be a 6'5 guy who's not just a possession guy with a little bit of verticality. We love everything about Kaz Allen. I picked him to have that breakout against SC last year. He delivered for me. I think he's the next iteration of the great Swiss Army knife in spread offenses, a la what Percy Harvin was at Florida and DeAnthony Thomas was with Chip in Oregon. I think huge numbers there, rushing, receiving, return game. And then I love Cam Brown. He gave us a taste. I want more Cam Brown. What a massive game he had against Fresno State. Really single-handedly is the reason the Bruins had the lead late in the fourth quarter of that game, because he was DTR's primary in that game, came up huge. I think if he can put it together this year, which he will, with the opportunity that is presented to him with the departure of Phillips and Dulcich. And then our guy TMA, the transfer from UCF, hasn't shown a ton yet, but all indications in spring practice are the kid has everything from a wide receiver perspective physically, as well as the route running ability. And I think him slotting in at that number four wide receiver slot really shows a great deal of depth at UCLA. You bring back DTR, arguably the favorite, the co-favorite, at least for Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. And I think this, to me, is a no-brainer that the Bruins of UCLA are in the top three.
Well, Madman, like I like to say, great minds think alike. I had the Bruins at number 3-2. And you get a guy in Bobo. Jake Bobo, 74 catches returning from last season. That is the second most within the conference for any player going to be playing the Pac-12 next year. We're going to get to number one later on this list. 74 grabs, 794 yards, was a preseason Pac-12 second team all selection by Athlon Sports. And you nailed it with Kaz Allen. I think Kaz Allen, we're projecting here like we've done with some of the recruits. And yes, we haven't seen a season's worth of Kaz Allen stuff, but just the, like you mentioned, the Swiss Army knife this guy brings to the table and the ways he can be dangerous with the ball in his hands. The USC game that you predicted, I was there for, folks. Madman, we're sitting in the parking lot. I got to rehash the story. I'm there with Madman himself and our godfather, Ryan Dyrud, the founder of LAFB. I picked Charbonnet to have a huge game. Ryan Dyrud picked Greg Dulcich to have a big game. Madman stood up on, you know, his podium and went, Kaz Allen is the guy that's going to break out. And breakout is almost an understatement on what this guy was doing. It looked like Randy Moss Thanksgiving Day stats, like three catches, 115 yards, two touchdowns. I mean, that is just – that is gross statistics. We're not even accounting for the fact that he had the 100-plus yards out of the end zone kickoff return. I think he's going to be the best return man in the conference, let alone be one of these standout receivers in the conference. And I think we were just starting to get a taste of what Chip Kelly can do with him, because if we count Deebo Samuel and what he does as a, you know, a wide receiver that does running back formations, we were starting to see that with a guy like Kaz Allen. Last game of the season last year, three carries, 56 yards, and a touchdown. You add that to what he can do in the receiving room, this guy is going to be such a multi-dimensional receiver out in the field. It's going to keep defensive coordinators up at night trying to game plan. How do I stop this 5'9", 175-pound speed demon out on the football field? So I love the Kaz Allen points. You mentioned Cam Brown, what he did against Fresno State, five catches, 111 yards, and a touchdown. Was, you know, he had some nagging injuries first year in the offense. I expect him to take a leap next year. And yeah, the fact that we have two four-star, you know, receivers waiting in the wings, whether it's Titus Moyaka Tatimala, you know, who was the first receiver that, you know, Devin Kirkwood mentioned on our podcast who was impressing him. It was Titus, you know, and I always take stack in that because those guys are competing against those guys every single day in practice. And you got Logan Loya, the local product, who, you know, has been very solid, has been reviewed very well by the coaches. He just hasn't really been able to crack that spot because, oh yeah, Kyle Phillips, arguably the best receiver we've had since J.J. Stokes in the program, has kind of, you know, had his role. He's gone now, so Logan Loya is going to be promoted. I think UCLA is the top, you know, top three receiving room in conference if everything hits their way. So, Madman, we are very similarly aligned on that. Gotta love it. Number two, you went with Stanford. I know you had all those reasons. And I'm going to take the hit on this one because I did not prep Madman the right way. It was meant to be all pass catchers, including tight ends. And my number two team was the Utah Utes. And that's because of what they can bring to the table in their tight end room with Dalton Kincaid and Brant Keith. And Madman, this is the college version of what the New England Patriots were able to do with Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez back in the early part of this time. These tight ends are special. And you look at the two of the top three receivers for Utah last year, Brant Keith, 50 catches, 611 yards, six touchdowns. Dalton Kincaid, 36 catches, 510 yards, eight touchdowns. Just a nightmare for opposing defenses because a lot of these times it's going to be outside linebackers who are going to be guarding these guys. And it is just not going to be fair for these guys to make plays. The top two receiving grades from tight ends within the Pac-12 last year, it was Kincaid and Keith at 83.2 and 80.5 respectively, according to PFF. And, you know, I mean, Keith has the highest receiving grade, second or the third highest receiving grade in the history of the Pac-12, only behind guys like, you know, Caleb Wilson, UCLA royalty, and, you know, Hunter Bryant. This guy, this room is so good that it overshadows their inexperience at receivers. I think, you know, there's a place for Devon Belly to really make a jump this year. Big 6'5" target, flashed a little bit last year, you know, 23 grabs, 389 yards, and 16.9 yards a catch. I like what I've seen from him. I think he's going to make a jump. But it comes back to what we talked about with Stanford, and I think why we have them in the top five and some others. It's the quarterback. And Cam Rising, he has that it factor. That team was way worse without him as the starting quarterback last year. And you saw it the first drive he took over at Utah. So with Cam Rising there, those two tight ends and Devon Velley on the outside, I got to put them at number two. I apologize for not including the tight ends, but I think they're a great room, Madman.
Absolutely, Thriller. And when you factor in the tight end combination of this, absolutely, I think you have to put Utah in that top two and frankly, firmly at number two. No question about it. I think you laid it out beautifully. And it's also the system, right? I mean, Utah and Kyle Whittingham has really taken a page out of early 2010 Stanford book. You know, be solid at the line, run the football, and then set up the passing game with the tight ends. The tight ends are really the bread and butter of the Utah passing game. And then once in a while, when you're sort of really cheating at the line and cheating in the box, they're going to hit you deep to make sure that you're honest. And that's really been Utah's bread and butter to be very successful. They're the preseason favorites to win the conference. And the tight ends are one of the primary reasons as to why. So no argument there. We just had a different definition, but completely agree with your definition.
We got Utah too. And I mean, you guys knew who was going to be number one. I mean, this is no secret. I know this is the Bruin Bible, but I have to say, this might be one of the most deep receiving corps I have ever seen as a fan of college football. And USC is number one. For
made here, Will, where the number one and number two on this list is both USC. That you can drive a train between number one and number two on this list. The gap between number one and number two on this list is greater than the gap between number two and number 12 on this list. When you look, this receiving core reminds me of 2001 Miami in terms of their roster construction, where you're talking about third string guys that are going to make the pros. I mean, when you look at their first team here, Will, Addison obviously goes without saying, Biletnikoff winner, 100 catches, 1,593 yards, 17 touchdowns. Mario Williams, five-star home run threat, 35 catches, 384 touchdowns. And then when you factor in Kyle Ford at 6'5", who's going to have a breakout year with Caleb Williams, he's sort of that next version of Drake London from a physical perspective. And so you got the smooth receiver, you got the guy who's going to get you the tough yards, and you got the home run guy. Then you go to the second team. The second team starts with Gary Bryan Jr., Thriller. We talked so much about Kaz Allen breaking out in that crosstown rivalry game. Gary Bryan Jr. on the USC side had over 150 yards in that game. He has 44 catches, 579 yards, and led the team with seven touchdowns outside of Drake London. And he's not even going to crack the starting lineup in terms of the receiving room. And then you got Taj Washington, who was a star on Memphis. This guy's the fifth wide receiver. And then you got Brendan Rice, who was the treasured recruit of Colorado. He's the sixth wide receiver. There is a very credible argument to be made. If you just took Bryant, Taj Washington, Brendan Rice, and their recruits, that's the second best receiving core in the Pac-12. And they're the backups on this team. You could drive a train between number one and number two here.
It is absolutely the most embarrassment of riches maybe this conference has ever seen at one position. It's always been USC when it comes to receivers, at least since in my lifetime. The only wide receiver taken number one in the NFL draft, Keyshawn Johnson. When I was conscious enough to start following football, Mike Williams was that guy. Dwayne Jarrett, Steve Smith. And then all the way to the 2010s on up, whether it's Nelson Aguilar, Marquise Lee, Michael Pittman, Drake London. The list goes on and on. USC is the, you know, wide receiver U. I don't think there's any argument for that nationally, even as just alone in the Pac-12 as a whole. Madman, this list is so deep, you even forgot one transfer that came, and it's Terrell Bynum. 26 catches, 436 yards, and averaging 16.8 yards a catch. A transfer from Washington that would have made that core even deeper.
Think about this for a second. What you just mentioned, Terrell Bynum has better stats than Chris Hudson of Oregon. Chris Hudson's going to be the number one at Oregon to start the season. And USC's number seven had better stats last year than Oregon's number one. Just think about that for context.
It's Jeff Bezos just dominating over the average man. That is how big this gap is in terms of the talent level at SC to the second best team within the conference at wide receiver. And I know you mentioned Addison. The numbers are outstanding. And just to get a Biletnikoff transfer to come in. We might have to fact check this. I don't even know if a Biletnikoff winner has ever transferred to another school. This might be the first time that's ever happened. 100 catches last year, 1,600 yards, 17 touchdowns. It's the way he does it, too. He's not the physically imposing receiver. This guy's 6 foot nothing, 175 pounds. He is just a phenomenal route runner and can beat you deep on the speed. This guy was third all-time in the history of PFF in deep receiving yards, which is catches over 25-plus yards on a passing route. The only guys that were ahead of him were Jamar Chase.
Up a little bit. You know who he plays like?
Yeah. And obviously
it's a long way to go. But Addison plays like Marvin Harrison. And when you talk about the smooth route running and just being a tactician and just understanding how to get open and just understanding defense, because he's not physically imposing, size or speed or hand size or catch radius. And Marvin Harrison was the same way. But Marvin Harrison could just do it all and just understood the game. And Addison has kind of that feel to him. Long way, long way to go. But he's got that element to him.
It can't be too far off. I mean, he just won the nation's best receiver as a true sophomore. I mean, this guy's doing something right. So you add that. And then on top of that, this guy has the second most TDs in a college season against man coverage, according to PFF. The only guy ahead of him was Devonta Smith, who won the Heisman in 2020. This guy is a certified baller, and every metric you want to grade Jordan has. And you just add a Mario Williams. Just add a Mario Williams. 35 grabs, 380 yards, 4 touchdowns, and a loaded Oklahoma receiving core. By the way, this is not a wide receiver transferring that's going to struggle to connect with his quarterback. Caleb Williams was his quarterback last year. Like, the familiarity's there. He's got the same coach he had last year, Lincoln Riley. Everything's going to be smooth for Mario Williams. I expect no hiccups for a guy that, you know, in 2 years from now could be taken as the number one player at the position in the NFL draft. I know scouts are drooling over a guy like Mario Williams. Gary Bryant Jr., not to be outdone, 44 catches, 579 yards, and 7 touchdowns. That's your third best receiver. And there's an infamous
– Will, he was wide receiver one for USC last year. I mean, so you're talking about guys that are capable of being wide receiver one, and they're 7 deep right now. It's ridiculous. You know, I remember it was Celtics coach was talking about LeBron 1 year, right, where he was like, you know, I thought we played really good defense on him, but he still got 36, 18, and 10 against us. And he's like, it's a joke. You know, that was his quote. It's like, it's a joke. That's kind of my quote for the USC. It's a joke, you know, I mean, in terms of what they have.
It's going to be like Iguodala winning the finals MVP when guarding LeBron going 37, 10, and 10. Like, it's just like, it doesn't make any sense. Taj Washington, you mentioned, actually had more receiving yards and catches than Bryant last year. He's number 4. And there's an infamous USA Today article that's going out. They have the top 5 individual players for each, you know, position within the conference. All 5 of their top 5 receivers are USC wide receivers. So I'm going to leave the argument there. USC is the top dog, hands down. Outside of maybe Ohio State, I don't think there's any receiving group in the country that can hold a candle to these guys. When you look at the production that they have, SC's got to take the top dog. Madman, I am thrilled you were able to do this with me. I am talking to an actual person on this podcast for the first time in 3 weeks. I absolutely love it when you come through, man. And guys, I just want to say, stay tuned for content this week. We are going to be at the Pac-12 Media Day tomorrow. Going to be interviewing the likes of Lincoln Riley, Chip Kelly, you know, Stephen Blaylock, John Gaines. Would I have liked maybe a couple big name players coming through? Maybe, but I love what we got going on there. Big stuff coming.
Your personality and our combination. We are going to make a promise to the viewers tomorrow. We are actually going to make Chip Kelly crack a smile. That's the goal tomorrow for the LA Football Network. The man who notoriously is very standoffish to the media. I am going to do whatever I can to make that man crack a smile tomorrow. You heard it here first on LAFB.
The Greg Popovich of Pac-12 Media. And if God forbid Gavin Newsom shows up, it's going to be all hell breaking loose there. That man's going to be first on the scene with that. Madman's going to be first on the scene with that, with Newsom showing up. But much love, guys. Bruin Bible, we're out. Stay tuned for some crazy content. LAFB just ramping up for the college football season. So stay tuned for all the content we got coming through. Bruin Bible, we are